Hi there and welcome. Jonathan here. These talks are offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to these practices. Your support makes a big difference. If you feel inspired to make a donation, please go to jonathanfaust.com. Thank you. I hope you found the meditation beneficial. As someone pointed out, it's not just what you got from that meditation, but it's also all the trouble you did get into for the last half hour by being quiet. So you have to factor that in. There's a site that I stumbled across that I like to check in with every now and then. It's called White Wine, W-H-I-N-E. And it's sort of this catalog of people with extreme first world issues. So tonight's talk is on compassion. And I ran across this. It was too perfect not to share with you. It's disease, disaster, war and crime are all terrible stuff. But what really upsets me is the boxes of instant oatmeal with 10 packets is the same price, but the maple and brown sugar box is 10 43-gram packets, where the fruit and cream flavor box is 10 35-gram packets. That is sneaky and wrong. There's someone with some perspective on disease, disaster, war, and crime and its importance. I'd like to talk a little tonight about if you're really on for liberation, you need to cultivate two wings of the practice. One wing is wisdom, the capacity to see clearly. And the other complete wing is cultivating compassion and cultivating kindness and empathy. Because without one or the other, we can't fly. We're seriously imbalanced. And tonight, in particular, I'd like to talk about where compassion in the world begins, which is inside you. So the place where you need to really start cultivating compassion is for yourself, the inner-directed practice. So a few things I'd like to talk about. First are the two wings, a little bit about the wing of wisdom and the wing of compassion, and exploring the opposite of compassion. You know, what gets in the way of your experience of compassion and what it means to take on compassion as a practice, to really take it on as something you're actively cultivating in your life. And then a little bit about some of the pitfalls when you practice compassion. They're what are called the near enemies, these states that look like compassion but not really. So we'll talk about that as well. So the two wings of the practice. You know, when I'm pretty sure I've shared this with you, but a number of years ago, someone from my faraway past said, "Well, how's your business?" And I said, "Well, I'm in the suffering business, so business is booming." You know, and I do spend a lot of time in dialogue around suffering. And not that long ago, I was spending some time with a fellow who was really unhappy. He was 45, but when I met him, he looked a lot older. He just seemed so world-weary. He was feeling really isolated in his life, and everywhere he looked, there was just sort of nonstop issues. And he wanted to take some time to look at that. So he saw there were relationship issues at work, there were relationship issues with his wife, and there were relationship issues with his kids. So there was something going on in the realm of how he was relating to other people. And he wasn't happy about anything in his life. There were some injustices at work that he thought were not right. He was frustrated with his wife. His kids were a never-ending source of conflict for him. And he acknowledged that he really pushed his kids and his wife and the people he worked with. He pushed them hard to be better at what they were doing. And as we explored his sort of judgmental, kind of aggressive, pushy nature with everyone in his life, he started saying things like, if I don't push, they're going to be complacent. They're going to be lazy. They're not going to do what they can. If I don't push back at work, I'm going to be taken advantage of. So he was a really super critical person, as you can imagine. And of course, just as he was judgmental and pushing everyone around him, that's exactly what he was doing with himself. So when he was able to do the U-turn of looking out there to look back at himself, he began to explore that judging aggressive quality that he was applying to himself. And he talked about he was a believer in constant and never-ending improvement. That was his kind of motto in life. And as he began to examine that, you know, the one side of the coin is always looking to refine what you're doing, but the other side is you're never allowed to rest where you are. So we started to look at that philosophy and how it was working for him, and he realized it was making him miserable. And so as we began to examine that judgmental quality and exploring how he carried that inside, we began to trace it back. And you might imagine he was pretty clearly able to trace it back to his parents and to his father, who was a kind of a tough military guy, kind of pushed him around. And at first he was defending his father. Well, I was a lazy kid. You know, I deserved it. You know, he made me what I am today. But then he began to really sense what it felt like. Just the shame that he felt, the anger that he had to suppress as a kid. His father was consistently mean to him. His mother didn't protect him because she was being bullied too. So there's a whole sense of feeling betrayed. And as he began to get in contact with kind of the raw pain of recognizing how that was running his life, he said, I can't stop myself. I can't stop myself with my boys. I can't stop myself with my wife. I don't want to do this anymore. And so as he was naming that judgmental quality, and he began to see how that was coming from his father, and then he traced it back further, and he saw that his grandfather was exactly the same way. He began to see this chain of events that was forming who he was. And I asked him, what if this is not your fault? And there was just a palpable sense of relief, a recognition that this was something he had inherited and that he no longer had to act out of that again. But that sense of feeling the pain of it, what began to shift it for him. The willingness to really acknowledge where the suffering lies. And we all have our inheritance of suffering. We've all experienced pain. We've all experienced betrayal. And when we practice mindfulness, when you practice non-judging awareness, everything unhealed in your life is going to find its way to be seen and felt and acknowledged. And really the only choice we have when you get down to it is to fall back on these two wings of wisdom and compassion. So what is this? What is my experience right now? Can I see it clearly for what it is? And then can I be with it? How can I hold this? And developing your compassion practice is what can allow you to hold that which you see and that which you feel in your life. for yourself and for those around you. If we have wisdom but no compassion, you can see the suffering, but you might not be motivated to do anything about it. If you don't have compassion, in that same way, you're not motivated. But as the Buddha said, when both are fully developed, when wisdom and compassion are fully developed, enlightenment is inevitable. Like, that is the formula for awakening, to see clearly and to explore how you can hold it. Compassion is referred to as one of the four Brahma-viharas. And the word Brahma-vihara translates as a number of things, like as a holy abode. But the best description I like is they're called the immeasurables. That when you feel compassion, when you tune into compassion, it is boundless. There's no edge to compassion. And part of the key here is seeing clearly what is here and then exploring how you access compassion. And the way we access compassion is through empathy, through the capacity to feel. It's the feeling that brings you into the experience of holding it in a larger framework. So, of course, as we attune to compassion in our lives, as you look toward how you can increase your capacity for self-compassion and compassion for others, you automatically come in contact with what blocks it. And I think the word cruelty sums it up pretty well. And you don't have to look very hard to see the cruelty being manifested in the world right now. Killing off in indigenous cultures, the different wars right now, the violence of slavery, the whole legacy of racism, of homophobia, of the violent pushback in our culture. And we're feeling it now in our culture, kind of the polarization that's come into our culture right now. So cruelty is our instinctive reaction. And when we practice self-cruelty, it's the opposite of compassion. And we express in three different ways. You express your cruelty through your actions, which is kind of the gross expression. And you express it through your speech. And you express it through your thoughts. So when you turn your attention on yourself, or when you turn against yourself, quite often the cruelty of thoughts we hold toward ourselves can be quite extreme, or how we talk about ourselves with others. When we really begin to pay attention to just how self-critical we are in our culture, it's quite stunning. Just glance at yourself in a mirror. You know, what are the immediate thoughts that come in? They're usually the inner thoughts of judgment. So practicing compassion is the opposite of cruelty. It is the antidote to cruelty. It's feeling the harm and wanting to alleviate it. But it's the feeling and then the alleviating of it. And when you develop compassion, it can be quite powerful. It begins to move you into action, into the actions of self-care, into the actions of compassion toward others. It overcomes indifference. You re-engage through cultivating compassion. The Dalai Lama said that compassion and love are the simplest practices, and they're the most difficult to practice. because their instinct is to move into judgment and anger and ill will. So you're probably familiar with the story of Mahatma Gandhi, who was approached by a woman, and she said, my child is eating too many sweets. Can you tell him to stop eating sweets? The sugar is not good for him. And Gandhi said, I will. I'll bring him back in 3 weeks. So she brought him back in 3 weeks, and he sat down with the boy, and he said, you shouldn't eat so many sweets. They're not good for you. And later the woman said, why did you wait 3 weeks to tell my son not to eat sweets? And he said, well, because I was eating sweets at that time. And in that same way, if we're wanting compassion from others, if we're wanting more compassion in the world, we have nowhere to start but with ourselves, which is the hardest place quite often, because we're so trained to be self-judgmental. So practicing compassion is a practice. I'd like to talk a little bit about how you can sort of fine-tune the practice for yourself. I hate to admit it, but I got whacked with another very intense kind of headache migraine over the last couple days. I'd gone about 3 months with nothing at all, and I'm beginning to recognize the warning sign is when I start thinking, hey, maybe I've really knocked this thing out. It's never going to happen again. But it was it's a huge amount of pain, and enduring for about 3 days, kind of an unrelenting pain, and it's in the back of the head, and I can't read, and I can't think straight. So I try caffeine and aspirin, I try moving, I try not moving, I try structural acupressure on myself, I try visualizing chakras, I try breathing, I try not doing anything. Ultimately, the practice is about compassion. After all my effort, it's about just the willing, can I just be with it? Can I just be with it? Can I just hold it with a sense of compassion? It's very, very challenging. And there are times when I just want out of the pain. You know, and that's where I think, you know, is there some drug that would just make this go away? And it gives me these little glimpses into what it must be like to become dependent on externals for pain relief, because pain is exhausting and hard to live with. So when I turn against myself, and when I'm in that whole twisting, turning experience, I'll say some things to myself like, well, what's wrong with you? You know, what did you do wrong this time? You know, why can't you figure this out? So there are times when we're all in pain and we're all sort of locked into that self, that rigid form of self-judgment. And the question becomes, how do you then turn your attention toward compassion? And there are a few things that you can explore. But the thing about finding what works for you is very unique to you. What are the levers that help you to make that shift from judging to non-judging, compassionate presence? So I thought I'd lead a little meditation and offer you some of the questions you can ask yourself, and you can kind of try them on for yourself. So if you like, you can close your eyes. And you might just bring into mind just some place in your life where you feel like there's some unpleasantness. Anywhere where you may feel some self-judgment or judgment of others. Just somewhere in your life where you're struggling. And if you can't think of something, you can think of someone else who's struggling and kind of try on their little issue. And you might just breathe into this. And in your own way, to kind of see it clearly, to kind of see the issue. You might recreate it visually, or any words or sounds or tone of voice. And take some time just to really sense what it feels like inside, how your body holds this issue. And see if you can slow down the breath and locate that inside. What does this feel like inside? And what does it feel like at its most chronic? Can you locate that? And as you sense what this feels like inside, I'll offer a few questions that some have found helpful. And you might apply them and just sense anything that might shift or move or change on the inside. And what would happen if you held this with compassion or kindness? What if you said, I care about this pain? Is there a sense of how this feeling inside would like you to be with it right now? A sense of what it needs to feel more whole? What if this is not so much a problem to be solved, but just something to be with? You might just sense any way this may have shifted or changed inside for you. And if you like, you can then deepen your breath and you can let your eyes open. Inclining the mind toward compassion. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, just to say, I care about this pain, can cultivate a shift. Just to ask, what if I offered this some kindness and compassion? How does it move or shift or change? Well, wisdom helps you to see clearly what's in your life. As Sokni Rinpoche says, compassion is the lubrication that helps you to let it go. So however you find your way to make that switch to that mode of compassion, it's a powerful thing to develop, this capacity to be with whatever arises. And that's the practice. The practice is the willingness to pause with what is here, to recognize it and to hold it. But it's a rare person who, when they experience pain, discomfort, emotional turmoil, mental turbulence, automatically thinks, oh, this is an opportunity to unlock compassion and relieve my suffering. It's just not what happens. Usually we want to nuke it. We'll protect ourselves in some way. will stay defended, will call in apathy. Indifference and apathy are, in many ways, the most powerful way to block compassion. And it's interesting how our relationship to compassion is usually the most related to how close it is in. You know, we can read about cancer statistics and they're just numbers. But when it's close in, someone you know, someone in your family, it's very real. It's very real. But as you practice compassion, it's very, very helpful to notice your particular style of turning it off. Where do you go when you have compassion fatigue? And compassion fatigue is a known phenomena. You can only take so much in before you have to self-regulate. You have to shut down. For some, it's just withdrawing. For some, it's actively pushing away. And we have emotion when we encounter that. For some, it's fear. For some, it's loneliness or shame. When you really have a commitment to being awake, all of this becomes more available and present to you. To notice how intimately and intricately you close off the heart, and then how you can choose to open it up again. So there are some qualities around compassion in the heart that look very close, but they're called near enemies. I've shared how I'm kind of I have some classical conditioning with names in my lineage, such as Wilhelmina Schulholz and Wilhelm Kaiser. You know, emotions and access to the heart were not a huge priority in my lineage. So it kind of takes time. I've have my own way of noticing how I close off self-compassion. You know, I grew up on a farm, and the basic rule was, if there's any pain, don't say anything for 3 days, and then maybe we'll talk about it. It's just that way of denial was sort of my specialty. So it can be very helpful to look at how you turn off when you're around pain, your particular style. But there are three things in exploring self-compassion that can be pitfalls. One is self-pity. There's kind of a near enemy of bringing a tenderness to yourself that can sometimes slide into self-pity. But when you're really seeing clearly what is there and bringing a sense of compassion and kindness to it, there's kind of a difference from sort of the indulgence that comes in sort of the circular process of self-pity. Another way we kind of judge ourselves in relationship to compassion is how we feel if we're compassionate to ourselves, it means we're weak or we're complacent, that we're not strong enough or we're giving up. And again, you can see how close that is. But when you explore pure compassion, there is a quality of holding that brings you to a much deeper sense of wholeness. Another element is that it can feel like self-compassion is narcissistic and selfish. It's all about turning it in toward you. And as I've shared before, people will sometimes say how these practices are completely and utterly narcissistic and self-indulgent. And you could be out there in the world. You know, why are you just turning your gaze into your navel and staying so inner-focused? And I know, as I've said before, I keep coming back to the analogy of your cup runneth over. That the times in your life when you are so full the energy and the goodwill is just pouring off you because you're so filled up from the inside. And when you're living from that place where your heart is full, it's a very different experience of life because it's coming out of you from a place of joy. So my response is, anything that fills your cup to overflowing is actually your responsibility. So when you engage into a practice that's designed to fully awaken you, training yourself to see clearly is so helpful. And the classical practices and concentration and open monitoring and all of that is very, very helpful. But the other equation is to really explore how you close off your heart to yourself and to really look closely at that. And when you look closely, there are three things inevitably you'll notice, the three characteristics of reality. You see that everything changes, everything born out of causes and conditions. And you see into the nature of suffering, that your relationship to what is changing has a direct and immediate impact on your level of stress and suffering. That what you resist persists. That what you can let free actually frees you. And you begin to see into the third characteristic of reality. And that is seeing deeply into the nature of yourself. That there's a quality of yourself that is in change and flux, that's destined to fall away from this form. And yet there's a quality that's non-changing as well. So when you find yourself in suffering and you find yourself in the fight that there's something that's changing you don't want it to, or something isn't changing and you do want it to, and you're caught, and then you have that recognition of all of this is just changing phenomena. Whatever I can just let go will result in greater freedom. And to see that it's not personal, it opens you to the experience of these Brahmaviharas. That you can begin to hold yourself in compassion and you can hold others in compassion as well. And you can begin to experience the arising of what's called bodhicitta, which is the capacity to see what's true and the capacity to hold it with compassionate presence. Just as when you practice concentration and you notice the mind is off, you begin to see all the patterns of how you move away from the present moment. When you begin to explore keeping your heart open to yourself and opening to others, you'll also begin to notice your patterning of resistance. And you can begin to see all the ways that you close yourself off from being truly happy or truly free. And that's both the beauty of the practice and the reality of the practice. And where I find when we can practice in community, it makes this transformational practice a lot easier. Why don't we close with a little time just to sit? You might bring your attention to your breath. And take this time to just to sense these two wings of the practice. The wing of wisdom. And you might let your sense doors be wide open. The here and now in the body. self-observation without judgment. And you might reflect on your willingness to cultivate your capacity for compassion. Reflecting on these classical phrases, if you wish, or repeating them. May I feel happy. May I know peace. May I feel safe from inner and outer harm. May I know the fullness of compassion for myself and others. May I feel free. And as you feel the breath, you might imagine your willingness to deepen and broaden and expand your capacity for happiness and peace, for safety and compassion. You might sense if there is someone who comes to mind who may be in need, someone who may be suffering. And if you like, just to bring them in mind and to wish them well, to empathize, to imagine what they're feeling, and to extend to them a compassionate presence. And you might imagine that spreading out and offering it to the furthest edges of space. May all beings feel happy and safe, free. And then offering it again back to yourself and back to this breath. And now you can deepen the breath. And as you're ready, you can let your eyes open. Thank you for your presence, for your kind attention tonight. If you'd like to sign up on the mailing list, you can sign up in the back. Yeah, your generosity is so appreciated for the class and for myself. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about compassion externally as a way to extend the practice beyond. Also want to mention that there's awesome yoga at 6:30 if you're not aware of that. And just to seal the deal, I think we've got some cookies just to push the compassion limit a little bit higher. So thank you again. Have a great night.